Good to have you with us this evening, or this afternoon, I guess you should say. If you want to open your Bible to the 14th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, Mark chapter 14, we've been talking about, for some time now, we've been talking about things that relate to what people call the Passion Week, that is, the last week of Jesus on the earth. And now we're talking about things that happened the last day, within the last just a few hours or a day between the time that these things happened and when Jesus died. And we're ready to take up what we had talked about, Jesus before the Sanhedrin. And we're going to be looking at a section in Mark. And as you look at Mark, sometimes you'll be reading one thing, and then Mark will switch over and explain something that happened a little bit later and bring it up there. Some people call it the sandwich method. You know, he's been talking about Jesus and his upcoming denial by Peter, and then certain things happen in the progress of time. And then instead of just going through and finishing that section out, there's a jumping over to another thing. So we'll be looking at that a little bit here in Mark chapter 14. I want to go ahead and read the section that we're going to be talking about, beginning at verse 53. And we'll be asking some questions and thought questions you may want to consider. You may want to reply if you've thought this or had some ideas about it. It says, they led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests and elders and the scribes gathered together. Peter followed at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the officers and warming himself at the fire. Now, the narrative about Peter continues later after this section. So it's the sandwich kind of thing. But he says, now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain testimony against Jesus to put him to death. They were not finding any. For many were giving false testimony against him, but their testimony was not consistent. Some stood up and began to give false testimony against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without hands. Not even in this respect was their testimony consistent. The high priest stood up and came forward and questioned Jesus, saying, do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? But he kept silent, did not answer. Again, the high priest was questioning him and saying to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, I am. And you shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Tearing his clothes, the high priest said, what further need do we to have of witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. How does it seem to you? And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. Some began to spit at him and to blindfold him and to beat him with their fists and to say to him, prophesy. And the officers received him with slaps in the face. I want to talk about that a little bit this evening. First question I have is this. What charges were led to Jesus being arrested and carried away to be brought before the high priest? Like, later on, the charge would be blasphemy, right? But you know, when people get arrested, at least on TV, that's where we see it mostly, they say something like, you have the right to remain silent, but they also tell them what they're being charged with. Is that correct? Jesus is not given a charge. He's being taken to these people for what purpose? To find a charge. So, how would you like that? You know, we're bringing you before, we're bringing you to trial, we're bringing you before these authorities, and we're hoping to find some dirt to drag up about you. Now, that's probably not done so much here, except maybe in Congress or something. But you're trying to manipulate the court system. Yes. Something worthy of death. They've already made up their mind about the charge, but they haven't charged. They don't have the charge yet, but they already have the sentence. We ought to find something, some reason that we could make it look legal to put him to death. So they arrested him, and we talked about that already, and how Peter tried to take up a sword against the arresting mob that came, but that was not Jesus' purpose. He had found strength in the garden, if you remember, Father, not my will, but thine be done. And the angel strengthened him, and with great resolve, he went forward and accomplished the plan that God made from the foundation of the world. So they left Mount Olives and traveled in a westerly direction. They would have had to go down the mountain, down into the valley, crossing over the Kidron Valley, the Kidron River through there, and up the other side to Jerusalem. And question number two, what time of day was this? Time of day? What? No daylight. This was night. They had already had the supper in that upper room, and it was probably somewhere in the wee hours of the morning. You know, we'd just be guessing, but the prayer in the garden would have taken some time, maybe several hours even. The time that he spent talking to the authorities would have taken, again, this is obviously it's before the legal proceedings were supposed to open, because something like this, and we'll talk about this later, when you're brought up on capital charges, the rule was you couldn't have a trial at night. So they're violating that, but they were going to wait till daylight before they actually made the official once and for all charge. Okay? So they were brought before Caiaphas. Who is Caiaphas? Pardon me? The high priest, exactly. He's the high priest. Now, back in those days, you know, you hear a lot about chief priests and priests, and the high priest is the big dog. You know, he's the one that's the only one who's supposed to be able to enter into the most holy place. Now, what happened for the Jews is that they had a high priest, Annas, and he was deposed by the Romans, taken out of office, and replaced by several people, and then finally Caiaphas, who was actually Annas' son-in-law. So it's kind of a family affair, I guess. But the people actually listened to Annas more than Caiaphas, because in their mind he's a high priest. So, but they're brought before Caiaphas. I think John's account says that he was first brought before Annas and then Caiaphas. But be that as it may, they brought him to him for this situation. The other part is to remember, I think, is that they needed to have some kind of tried really hard to make it look like they were doing something that was above board. Now, normally, there would be a particular place that the Sanhedrin would meet. It was a place near the Temple Mount, and this was not done there. It was done at his residence. And so when you look at that, you say, something's fishy going on here, because you're having a trial for capital offense, and you're doing it at night, and you're doing it at the residence of the high priest. So, you know, all of these things kind of lead us to believe there's something going on here that's not exactly legal. So who gathered at Caiaphas's palace? Let's take a look at that in chapter 14, verse 53. Who gathered there with other than Caiaphas? Chief priests, elders, and scribes gathered together. This may be an official or an unofficial meeting of those who comprise the Sanhedrin Council. I kind of have a feeling or an opinion that this maybe didn't include everybody, but it may have been enough to form a quorum to discuss it and to come up with the charges that they wanted to present. Get everybody lined out, go in the right direction, so that when they had their official meeting at sunrise, they could convene legally and they could just kind of move this along quickly and do it the way they wanted to do it. So anyway, they had these religious leaders there. If the whole council was there, you might then have Nicodemus and you might have Joseph of Arimathea, and you would think that they would have spoken out against it. But anyway, they're there, the council's convened, and the high court of the Jews is there. Now picture what the Sanhedrin generally did in their meetings. An official Sanhedrin meeting, there were 70 members, and the high priest was the one in charge. Also would be the deciding vote if there was a 35-35 tie. So you have these people, and they would sit in a circle, like a half circle. They could see each other. It may have been more than a half circle, but they would sit in like that, and the person on trial would sit in the middle. Does that sound intimidating? It does sound intimidating, and probably for a good reason. They like that intimidation. You think about this as a sidelight. In Acts chapter 4, it says, around verse 5, it makes this interesting statement. It says, this is when Peter and John were arrested early on in the church. It said, on the next day, the rulers and elders and scribes were gathered together in Jerusalem. And Annas, the high priest, was there, and Caiaphas, and John, and Alexander, and all who were of high priestly descent. And when they had placed them in the center, they began to inquire, by what power or in what name have you done this? Then Peter, filled with the Holy Spirit, said to them, rulers and elders of the people, if we are on trial today for the benefit done to a sick man as to how this man has been made well, let it all be made known to all the people of Israel, and by the name of Jesus Christ the Nazarene, whom you crucified, God raised from the dead, by this name this man stands before you in good health. Peter and John, right there in the middle, surrounded by all these dignitaries, these important people, these religious leaders that made up the highest court in the Jewish land. They were still subjugated to Rome, but in their minds, they were the highest court among the Jews. And at this proceeding, they also had some recorders on the right and on the left of the circle. And these are the men who would record the proceedings of how they did that shorthand or what. But they were taking notes. And usually you started with the side that would present evidence to acquit. And then you would have the ones present evidence to convict. And they would one to do the one do the other. Jesus' trial did not have anybody expressing any evidence to acquit. They just jumped over that to evidence to convict. That's all it was. There was nothing about it that was really legit in any way. But I mentioned that Peter and John, and then later the apostles in Acts chapter 5, were before the Sanhedrin Council. and there would be a very intimidating kind of thing. I mean, the people who were part of the council saw the boldness and the courage of Peter and John and the apostles, and they said, "These men, we recognize them, although they're uneducated, untrained, that they have been with Jesus, and they were filled with holy courage, boldness that God gave them." So anyway, we see that, and so we want to talk about Jesus being in that situation. Jesus standing before the Sanhedrin Council. Remember, this time he'd already been through the agony of that prayer in the garden, where I think the greatest battle that he fought was won, and God has strengthened him. But now he's standing there in the midst of their bogus charges. I got this information from somebody else, but see what if we can come up with it. We mentioned some already, but why was the trial of Jesus illegal? It was a kangaroo court. Think of some reasons. Maybe some we already mentioned, maybe some other ones. Can you? Why was it illegal? It was in the middle of the night. Do good things happen in the middle of the night, legally speaking, or, you know, no, it doesn't happen. So it was done at night. That was against the Jewish laws. Anything else? Okay. There's the matter of prejudice, and we would say that a judge might recuse himself if he was somehow involved in a case that came before his court, or he was related to either party. In this case, they were trying to find reason to put him to death, so there was no fairness involved in it. Anybody else? It was packed, you might say. Yeah. Jesus was silent. But if you think about it, could anything that Jesus have said have changed their minds at this point? Probably not. And that might have made him happy if he would have went back on things. Yeah. And had he tried to defend himself, he already knew what the plan of God was. It was time for him to go to the cross. And so he was silent. The Bible actually talks about him that way in Isaiah 53 and Psalm 22. He's going to die on the cross, but he's like a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. Had a couple other things. I'll just read these, and if you have others, let me know. Capital cases were not to be tried on a Sabbath eve or the eve of a festival day. So the court should have been closed. This is the Passover and then the beginning of the week-long Feast of Unleavened Bread. And already mentioned one of those, so I won't mention it again. The verdict of... Another thing interesting that the Jews had as a law in their Mishnah or whatever their traditions were, is if you came up with a verdict of guilty, you had to sleep on it and then confirm it. So if on one day you were convicted, then the next day you come back and, yes, that's right. That would prevent, what would that prevent? Acting in haste? Railroading somebody along. So that was part of it that they didn't do. And here's another thing that's interesting about it. The witnesses, the way they treated the witnesses was not right. Witnesses were supposed to be scrutinized and warned carefully. When witnesses disagreed, the whole evidence was null and void. And these witnesses disagreed. More important than that, to be a false witness in a court proceeding carried serious consequences if you were proven to be false. Remember the ninth commandment? You shall not bear false witness. I think that's kind of interesting, and we'll maybe talk about this a little bit later, but the rule was that if you bore false witness, whatever the penalty was that the person you bore the false witness against was going to receive, you received it. So if this is a capital case, and these men brought up frivolous charges falsely against Jesus, they should have been warned that that means you will die for giving that false witness. I'm telling you that the law of Moses was serious about fair, impartial trials. That's the law. In actual practice, sometimes it was not done that way. A lot of times those who were poor got mistreated and didn't get the fair shake. Okay. Peter, meantime, he's in the courtyard, as we've seen earlier, and he's going through his denials. People are starting to kind of recognize him, thinking that they recognize him. Remember that in it was nighttime. They had torches. It was by firelight. And so they were just thinking about it, and hard for him at this time. But I thought about this thought, and maybe we'll just mention in passing, is that one of the things that I've noticed about this account, and thinking about how Jesus must have felt when all the time he is talking about he's going to die on the cross, he's going to be crucified at the hands of godless men, and he keeps telling the apostles this is going to happen, and they don't get it. They don't get it. Or they refuse to get it. And then Jesus takes them to the garden and he's praying. My soul is grieved to the point of death. And he prays about it in the garden. His disciples sound asleep. How lonely it must have been for Jesus. How lonely it must have been. And then as the disciples all fled him, it says all fled from him. And then now he's before Caiaphas. And there's that one apostle who came, but other than that, you have Peter outside looking in, but Jesus there all alone, surrounded by the Sanhedrin. They're trying to drum up charges against him, and he's just sitting there silent. You know, you'd want to, you know, while being reviled, he did not revile in return, 1 Peter 2. He's not answering them. They're giving him all this stuff. And you can feel the level of frustration and the anger that these men felt against Jesus. Jesus must have felt awfully alone. Alone before the council. But this was what he was called to do. The trial was really nothing but a fishing expedition. Bring somebody to court, and maybe you have investigating something, and then in the process of doing that, you come up with a charge, and then put somebody on trial for that. That's not right. That's not right. And it wasn't right for them to do what they were doing. They couldn't find anything against him. And finally, there was a couple of men that, I'm going to paraphrase a few things here, a couple of men, some who stood up and said, this man said, I will destroy this temple and build it, replace it with a temple made without hands. Well, that sounded pretty interesting. Is that what Jesus said? No. good point. Jesus was not talking about the temple. In fact, he didn't say, I will destroy it. He said, you will destroy this temple, my body. You will destroy my body and will be raised in 3 days. Now, there are other places where he said that the temple is going to be destroyed, but not in that case. So even the scripture says, even in this, their testimony was not consistent. Till finally, in verse 60, the high priest gets up and he begins talking and coming forward and questioning Jesus. And he's had enough. He says to Jesus, do you not answer? What is it that these men are trying to testify against you? Again, he's questioning the person on trial. Give us some incriminating evidence against yourself. Isn't there something in our laws against that? You don't have to testify. I refuse to testify on the grounds that it might incriminate me. You ever hear that in Perry Mason's show? Yeah, that's kind of what's going on here. Trying to get him to incriminate himself, but he would not. And then finally, verse number 61, the high priest, again questioning, said, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? Blessed One being God, are you not the Son of God? And Jesus said two words, I am. And we might try to pass over that quickly, but the I am is a pretty significant claim. It's how the Israelites were to refer to their God. I am has sent me to you, back in the book of Exodus. I am. And not only that, Jesus said, you'll see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, coming with the clouds of heaven. What is this talking about? He's coming with the clouds of heaven. And you're going to see it happening. What's that going to be? I'm probably talking about the second coming, isn't he? Pardon me? There are two views. One is it could be the destruction of Jerusalem. But in this case, you know, it could also be the second coming. Some disagreement about that, I think. But to talk about seeing the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven lines up real well with Daniel chapter 7, talking about things there. The Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. Jesus ascending unto the Father in Acts chapter 1. You might remember that the disciples were standing there with their mouths open, gawking into heaven and staring there. And the angel comes and says, Why do you stand there like this? Don't you tell them to go to Jerusalem, like he said. And for the Son of Man will come again in the same way that you see him ascend into heaven with the clouds. He's coming from heaven with the clouds. And so all of this. And you begin looking again. They just keep seeking things against him. And finally, Jesus says that. And how did they react? How did the high priest react? I don't know how he did it, but he just grabbed his clothes and tore them. His robes, his tunic, whatever it was. That's what they did when they were extremely grieved or hurt, or in this case, they had heard blasphemy in their mind. This is how they emphasize the charge. You've heard it yourself, he said. We don't need witnesses. We got him to say it himself, and we heard it. And asked, is he deserving of death? And certainly they condemned him for that. In verse 65, just to kind of close it up here, some began to spit at him. These are the Sanhedrin. This is the Sanhedrin Council. These are the chief priests, religious leaders. And they to blindfold him. The word blindfold here means to cover the head. I'll think of the idea of covering someone's head because they're going to be executed. They don't deserve to see the light of day. They covered his head. And then it says, beat him with their fists. And some of the parallel accounts talk about the fact that they would beat him like that and then say, prophesy. In other words, tell us who it was who hit you. And then they handed him over to the officers who received him with slaps in the face. This is just the beginning. Just the beginning of what Christ went through for us. He was wounded for our transgressions. We're going to stop there. Appreciate your attention. And we're going to sing a song of invitation. If you have a spiritual need we can help you with, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.